This is Limitless Possibility. I'm Luc-Olivier Dumablet.
And I'm Yannick Magnan.
Okay, what's the topic this week, Yannick?
Language learning. Not programming language learning, but human language learning.
Huh. That's going to be interesting. But before we start, we'll have some follow-up from 2 weeks.
Go ahead.
Yeah, of course. Oh, I was waiting because it seems that you wanted to start. But first link is a link that I found related to trying to be more productive on the iPad. It's a blog called One Tap Less, and it's mostly related to tips and tricks to improve the automation on the iPad using Xcode URL or just normal URLs.
It looks real interesting. I subscribe to it. I'm a big fan of automation tools, so I'm looking forward to seeing what posts go up, though there haven't been very many posts since the blog launched, so I'm a little worried.
Yeah, but it's not a blog launch. It was just a rebranding or something.
Well,
so...
yeah, but since the rebrand, there's been one post, so I'm a little worried.
But it was already linking to most of the biggest like automation application for iOS. So the back catalog is quite big right now. So it was pretty interesting for me.
Mm-hmm.
And you found another link from Six Colors, which is how Apple can boost my productivity on the iPad.
Yeah, this I don't really agree with. So it's not written by Jason Snell, which runs Six Colors. It's another blogger. I forgot his name, Chip something. He wrote a post about how he uses his 2013 X7 with an external mouse, and obviously that means that it's a good idea, and it should also happen on the iPad, which has software designed for touch and not for pointer input. So I disagree with the entire idea of this post, because the issues with iPad productivity have nothing to do with the fact that you're using your finger. It has everything to do with the fact that the system is limited. In particular, he talks about text selection, which is a whole bunch of problems, especially on iOS 7 and iOS 8. That is about the only time when I would think that a mouse would be more helpful, but in every other case, it's software limitations, not hardware limitations, that make it a pain in the ass to be productive on the iPad.
Yeah, you're right. And 2 weeks ago, I spoke a little bit about copy and paste and text selection, and I found it. I hate the way it's currently done. And it was like you just said, it was really like it was not improved on iOS 7.
No, a bunch of bugs were introduced.
Yeah, exactly.
It was really frustrating. And it still is frustrating because a lot of those bugs are still in iOS 8.1. And recurring theme on the show, there are lots of bugs in Apple software these days.
Yep.
Next up in follow-up is a link from the Pocket blog. Pocket, which is the competitor to Instapaper and Readability. They wrote an article called The Screen Size Debate, How the iPhone 6 Plus Impacts Where We Read and Watch. And more or less, to save you a click, it's people use their iPhone 6 Plus instead of iPads now, more or less, if they own both, which is not entirely surprising. But in my case, the opposite has been true. I've been using the iPad way more since I got the iPhone 6, which is weird.
Hey, but I don't see that to be weird, you know? Like last episode, I kind of tinker with that idea that I might be an iPhone 6 Plus user in the future, because maybe a solution to me will be having one device to focus on.
Yeah, well, I can understand how it's appealing to some people. For me, the iPhone 6 is big and not very appealing to me screen size-wise. I would much rather do stuff on the iPad. But that's pretty much it. But again, like, I'm going to be in Japan next year for a month and a half, and my phone is going to be my primary computer there, like it is every year when I'm in Japan. So it's going to be interesting to see if I see any meaningful changes in my behavior in Japan because of the larger screen. But like in my day-to-day home life, I just prefer the iPad so much more.
And I'm sure you will see some changes with that bigger screen when you'll go traveling.
We'll see about that.
Good. So before we start, we also have some good news. So that's nice. People are downloading our episodes and listening to us speaking. So that's big plus. But the bad news is We kind of currently we were expecting smaller hosting bills than we currently are, but at least they're not that high. So we don't want to beg for money, but just a big thank you for all of our listeners listening to us every other 2 weeks.
Yeah, and we might make some back-end changes to actually bring the bill down a bit, because it seems that a lot of what we're doing with regards to the feed could be responsible for this, as it's not necessarily like bandwidth costs and all that stuff. So that may be coming in the coming weeks. So if you experience any issues on the website or on the feed, we apologize ahead of time.
Because we are Canadian, so...
Yeah, it's our job to apologize.
Exactly.
Also, this week we're going to be stepping up our game in terms of editing and sound quality, so please let us know what you think via Twitter. We'll be going through our contact information at the end of the show. Hopefully the sound quality this week is much better than it was last week. So let's move on to the main topic, right?
Yeah, exactly. I want to get some tips and tricks related to language learning.
It's not really a tips and tricks show, but we'll go into it. So let's talk about learning English. So languages are politically charged in Quebec, where Lucavie and I are live right now. There is this thing called Bill 101, and more or less Bill 101, there are like a bunch of clauses, but the big one that is that hits us all really is kids can't go to an English school unless at least one parent went to an English school themselves.
It's important to note that when Yannick says an English school, it's like elementary school. So if you go to an English university as an adult, it doesn't count.
Right. So K-12 is impacted by this, but college is not. So I am very lucky that my mom went to an English school and I grew up bilingual. I don't have a memory really of knowing only French. It was always both together, which was great. I went to English school. Really, I started kindergarten in English school and I ended in eighth grade. At that point, there was a merger between two high schools. Well, middle school and high school is basically secondary school here in, at least in Quebec. So the secondary school, So there were two K-12 schools that merged together, and basically they split back up into two. So there was Three Rivers High School, which is rebranded to MEES, Morrissey Elementary English School, I believe it is. And there was St. Patrick School, which got rebranded into Three Rivers Academy, which was the middle school and high school portion. And I wound up being in middle school at the time. And it was hell. It was a hell that I predicted and that absolutely nobody believed me about, but I predicted it. So there. And the state of the school went down the tubes. It was like, I don't want to tune my own horn too much, but I was a really good student and I had no interest in going to school anymore. So because like everything was just terrible. So I switched to a French school in ninth grade, and that's where I met Lucavie.
Yay!
And that's where I got to witness the French school's English education system firsthand.
I want to know something here. Like, at that time, Yannick and I were at a private high school, so let's just say that people might have experienced different stuff in the public system, in the real public system.
Definitely. I think that the fact that we were a private school made that it was much, much better than what people in public schools get. Like, people in public schools have, like, people who... Well, to a certain degree, we did too, but, like...
I will interrupt you here and say, if you have any objection about what Yannick just said about private school, just email him or ping on Twitter. I haven't said anything bad about public school in Quebec.
No. I didn't say anything bad about public schools. I just mean that private schools are going to have the means to pay teachers of a higher quality than those in public schools. Is that controversial? I don't know.
I would say it's kind of controversial in Quebec to say that, but...
Okay, whatever. Well, actually, in our school, the English learning was actually pretty good. It was not, like... people came out of there competent in English, I believe. Anyway, would you agree with that statement?
Yep.
Yeah.
Maybe, yep.
So they were competent in English, but they weren't like, they were maybe like eighth grade. No, not eighth grade. Yeah, maybe eighth grade level from an actual English school. That was about the level they were coming out of graduating from high school. That's about what I think.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
So, Nicolas, how did you personally find learning English in the French school system? Because you didn't grow up bilingual, basically.
Yeah, exactly. So, let me think a little bit, because I think I started learning English on fourth grade or fifth grade, if I recall correctly.
So it starts very late.
Yeah, it when I was young, it started very late. I know that the system changed in the latest years, so I think they start really, really young now. Like, around the age of maybe 7 or 8, so it might be like second grade or third grade.
Mm-hmm.
But I knew that I was lucky enough to go to a program that you will be able to do half of the sixth year in English and the other half in French. So it was if I want to translate word to word the name of that program, it was like intensive English program. And it was for, honestly, you had to do some kind of interview, quote unquote. And they had to, it was mostly like just an interview about your grades and all that stuff, because they wanted good students, like with good grades.
Well,
in that class.
It's sort of like how I got into private school, because I didn't have to take any exams or anything. They just looked at my grades from my existing secondary school education and they said, oh yeah, you're good, so you can come in.
So yeah, so I would say that sixth year was when I honestly started learning English, because the first year was kind of boring and just like say baby and say I and say yes and count 1 to 10 and all that's
and the vowels and
exactly.
Yeah.
So at the time, what happened is like for the first 4 or 5 months of the year, of the school year, you were going really, really fast to do all of your French grades, including all of the other subject, but in French. And the other half was mostly just learning English. So you will have ended all of your like maths, historical classes, science classes in the first part of the year. And then in the second one, you will just only learn English and practice English and improve
it. In that second half of the year, were you speaking English and doing all the science stuff, but like in English, or were you just focusing on English language?
Just focusing. If I recall correctly, it's just focusing on English.
Huh.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why it was called an intensive program. Because maybe, if I recall correctly, I might add still one course or maybe two courses left. But most of it was English learning.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and then I moved to high school, and like 10 years ago, it was where most Quebecers were starting to learn English during high school.
Hmm. Wow. I can't imagine that, because like I spent so much time in elementary and middle school learning English that you guys basically never had.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, your French classes went not that great.
Well, I'm not sure about that, because I came into your class and I was like beating most of the, I was like in the top in French. Maybe.
Really?
Maybe not when I was like when I just got there, but by the end of the year, definitely.
Maybe I will say that you're an exception related to that, because most people that were in the English education system had really big struggle when they moved to CEGEP, and it was their first French experience at school.
Yeah, I can see that. Maybe the big shift in quality was like the years that I wasn't in the English school system, Or maybe they just had like a, well, a school that didn't encourage people to be very good. Like my French teacher, it's easy to like hate her at the time, but she was actually like very, very, she took it to heart that we should be really good in French, because if we weren't, we would actually have difficulty. And that's probably why she was so hard on us and why she seemed sort of mean to us.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I wanted to note that Yannick and I didn't grow up in a big city like Montreal, where that's mostly where most people in Quebec speak English right now. Right. I don't want to generalize, but like the biggest concentration of Anglophone people is in Montreal. It's not in Trois-Rivières.
Definitely not. So let's move on from English and let's talk about Japanese. So you don't speak Japanese.
I don't.
That's unfortunate. We could have done the whole entire rest of the show in Japanese.
Oh my.
Actually, we couldn't because I don't have most of the vocabulary to do that.
Yeah, and you mentioned last episode that you're kind of scared that you will fail your Japanese exam in 2 weeks.
Yeah, sort of. We're going to get back to that later. So basically, this episode, I want to take you through my journey in learning Japanese. I started learning in summer of 2011, I guess. And now we're going to go through like each of my trips in Japan and how I felt at the time with my Japanese level and what I did to change my stuff. And really, there's a lot of stuff on the internet that tells you that this is the one true way to learn a language. And I'm here to tell you that there isn't one true way to learn a language. It varies from person to person. And a lot of the sites that try to sell you on a specific, the correct way, in quotes, to learn a language, well, they're trying to sell you an ebook or something. So it's in their interest to make it seem like it's the only way to do it.
Like it's the, like one pill is the only way to lose weight.
Yeah, basically that. So I'm going to take you through like how I learned Japanese and how I got to where I am. And truthfully, I am not as far as I could have been if I had been more intense about it. But part of what I like about my learning strategy is it's very casual.
And before we start about the how, can you start with the why? Why did you learn Japanese?
So I've always been attracted to like Japanese pop culture stuff, video games, anime, like Sailor Moon. I have vivid memories of that. Cardcaptors, you do too, don't?
Yeah, but I'm mostly just a Cardcaptor fan.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
But yeah, I was always drawn to that kind of stuff, and video games even more so. And Sega's video games in particular were always very, very Japanese. Like they were even more intensely Japanese than the others, which probably doesn't mean anything, but like when you think of Japanese video games, you probably think of Sega first, more so than Nintendo, which I don't know. I'm probably going to anger some people by saying that. I'm sorry. Please send email to me. Are you still there?
Of course.
Okay. I had lots of prior knowledge before deciding to learn Japanese about Japanese pop culture and all of that. And I was familiar with how the language sounded, maybe not what things meant, but how it sounded. I knew a couple characters here or there. And really, I wanted to learn it because I had finished college and I had nothing else to do. And a lot of my interests are aligned with Japan, so it would be interesting to learn Japanese to expose myself to more native Japanese material, like playing video games without translations or listening to anime without subtitles and all that stuff. So let's start in summer 2011 when I bought my first textbook. It's the Genki textbook, which is by the Japan Times, which is an English language Japanese newspaper, I believe. Multiple friends had recommended it to me, and I got about halfway through it and then stopped. I knew just enough Japanese to be dangerous, but not enough to be useful, which is sort of a problem. Because I could say, like, this is my name, this is my job, here's my mom is tall, this is a pen. And I could say all those things, but none of those things are really things that you say to people.
Yeah, exactly. This reminds me when I started to learn Swedish during my exchange program. And it's like, I could tell you where I'm from, where what's my age, I'm a male, what I'm currently studying. Except that.
Fill du temps, no get the data with me.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. So that is about all the Swedish I remember from the Pimsleur course that I did. So that's pretty good. I can ask people to go eat with me.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah. That's brilliant. I'm going to be getting all the girls in Sweden. Yeah, so I stopped halfway through the textbook, mostly because I found out that textbook learning is not for me, which is not really a surprise. Because I was never really big into textbook learning in school either. But the good thing is I got far enough that I could figure stuff out on my own, and that led to fall 2011. Fall 2011, I dove headfirst into idol variety shows, hours of them every week. It was insane. I got into the idol group AKB48, which, if you don't know AKB48, it says 48 in the name, but don't be fooled by that, because there are oftentimes more than that. It's 48 plus girls in one idol group. They have the Guinness World Record for the largest girl group in pop music, which is crazy. Obviously, all 48 girls don't show up on the show at the same time. That would be insane. Though some episodes, they do, which is weird. And I started following many of their weekly variety shows on a regular basis. And I watched them raw with no subtitles because I wanted to follow them on a weekly basis. And subtitlers often, well, in that space anyway, take longer than a week to translate. So that's not very good. I wanted to watch the latest stuff all the time to stay up to date with their news and their songs and everything. But the advantage is the Japanese television will often have large colored subtitles at the bottom of the screen, in Japanese, of course. But that means that if you aren't sure what they said, you can read it at the bottom of the screen often, which is very useful for learners. And that experience of watching hours of idol TV shows every week was very, very helpful, because television is a visual medium, and you can often associate words with certain items or facial expressions or words that they do, and then get the gist of what's going on. And that's really, really useful. And it helps that Japanese television is often very, very wacky and entertaining, even if you have no idea what's going on. So that's that.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I remember watching some stuff with you, and I was like, oh my goodness. And, you know, even without not understanding what they say, it looks strange.
It does, and that's great. Japanese television, the problem is you can overdose on it. Specifically, like, 2 years ago when I was in Japan, I watched way too much Japanese television that I got tired of it. I didn't think it was possible to get tired of it, but believe me, it is.
No, I trust you on that. I honestly trust you on that.
Yeah, so luckily I've sort of brought down my TV watching over the years, and now unfortunately I don't even have the hard drive storage to keep the shows on, so I can't actually keep up with the shows as much as I used to. So fall 2011, I wanted to start planning for a Japan trip that I was going to go on in 2012. So I decided to go tour the internet for language learning methods and websites and all that stuff, and I discovered this one website, which is notorious in the Japanese learning community, called All Japanese All the Time. I should make it very clear, this is not an endorsement of the site's content or its, parentheses, paid learning materials. It's based on an English learning method, oddly enough, called the anti-moon method, which was by, I believe, two Polish people who wanted to learn English without knowing English and sort of came up with a self-learning method. It was just tweaked for the realities of the Japanese language, because obviously the English alphabet is the same as many other languages, and Japanese has three alphabets. Good luck.
Yay, three alphabet to learn.
Yay. So there are the tone of that website in particular bothers me, because it makes it sound like you can just watch anime and learn Japanese, and that is not really how it works. There are two main ideas that stuck out from that website. The first is immersion. So expose yourself to as much Japanese native content as you can every second you are not socially obligated to be speaking in your native language. That means every second of the day you have headphones on, listening to podcasts, listening to radio, listening to music videos on YouTube, listening to anime, whatever. You have to be listening to Japanese 24/7, basically. There are even some blog posts, I believe, which say, hey, listen to this podcast while you're sleeping. It will, might work. I don't know. Which, I mean, I can sort of relate to that, but it's not that great.
Yeah, maybe it's going a little bit too far when you want to, when you have to listen to stuff when you're sleeping. But I do think that doing an immersion, or like immersing yourself into the new language you want to learn, is a good idea. It is pretty powerful to do.
Yeah, and like since I've seen that website, my phone's been in Japanese all the time. My iPad's been in Japanese all the time. So when I get an error, I have to figure out what it means, which is sometimes bothersome, but especially at the start. But
and especially when it's iCloud errors.
iCloud doesn't show error messages. Come on, you know better than that. Aww. It just silently crashes in the background. The other big pillar in all Japanese all the time is SRS, which stands for spaced repetition system, and this is common to a lot of other language learning methods. Basically, SRS means flashcards you don't know well. It's a flashcard system to start with. Flashcards you don't know well will repeat more often than flashcards you don't. So that means words that you know very, very, very well, you might see once every 6 months if you're at the level where I am. Whereas a card that you have lots of trouble with, you will see every day that will pop up in your daily reviews of flashcards. So I was doing that. I started doing SRS around that time. Specifically, though, All Japanese All the Time talks about using SRS in combination with sentences from the media you immerse yourself into. So while you're listening to Japanese all day long, you should start noting down sentences and finding out what they mean, and then putting those sentences into your deck for SRS so that in your next review that sentence will show up and you can analyze every element and put it in your card. The problem for that is, A, you have to do a lot of work, which I suppose is also a plus, because doing that work probably helps it sink into your head. But what I found really surprising about the whole approach was they basically said nothing about learning grammar rules or learning formal learning. They basically said, well, textbooks are useless. The only thing that is useful in a textbook is the sentences that are written in Japanese, and all of the explanations, don't read them. That is not helpful.
I would say it is helpful if you only want to, like, be socially prepared to speak with people. But the second you want to write something, you're starting to get fucked.
Yeah, well, there's more to the method than just what I said. So the writing, they do tell you, like, one of the first things they tell you to do is learn hiragana and katakana, which are the two phonetic alphabets, which you need because otherwise you can't read pronunciations of stuff. So that's sort of a problem. Then they say learn the 2000 joyo kanji, which are the most frequently used kanji characters. Kanji characters are characters that are borrowed from the Chinese language, which may contain many, many, many strokes. And there are about 2000 joyo kanji, which are basically the ones that are allowed to be used in native media that are assumed to be understood by the native population. And I'm probably screwing up this explanation because it's complicated, but that's more or less how I understand joyo kanji to be. And they say, like, learn all the characters' meanings, but don't actually memorize anything else. Like, don't memorize the pronunciations of the characters, which is sort of strange. And I did that for a while. So I think I was about like 800 kanji into RTK, which is the textbook they recommend. Ironically, the textbook that they recommend to use to actually learn the kanji, which gives you visual aids to remember, like, this character looks like scooping something out of something, and it means this. Or there is a box with a line through the middle, that means middle. It's all like visual cues like that, that you can look at the character and roughly make out the meaning. I did about 800 of those, and then you look at sentences, and yeah, you can sometimes make out what it is, but it's not a full replacement for actually understanding the kanji. So all Japanese all the time is the XHTML strict of learning languages. It is zero tolerance towards mistakes. So to complete the analogy, XHTML strict in theory, if you make a mistake in your HTML document, the browser is not supposed to figure it out on its own. It just says, sorry, parse error, not going to display the rest of the web page, or actually not going to display any other web page, and you just see this big parse error. So all Japanese all the time is zero tolerance towards mistakes. To avoid making mistakes, whenever you speak in Japanese, you should stick to simple sentence structure. That is a nice alliteration there.
Wow. So I guess what they are saying is, like, just speak about being
talk
a
about
man.
Your cat.
And yeah, talk about your cat, being a man, the temperature outside, like, is it sunny or not, and that's it.
Yeah, but the problem is that attitude doesn't even work, because the person who founded that website, there is a video of him speaking in Japanese on the internet, and this is one of the things that people bring up when they talk about, like, this website being, like, full of shit. Which I don't think it is full of shit. I just think that there are, like, a couple ideas you can use and the rest is sort of weird. So he speaks in Japanese, but Japanese has this concept of various politeness levels. So if you're speaking to an old person, you're not going to speak the same as you're going to talk to your best friend. And generally that's a good idea in most languages, but, there's a video of him speaking in Japanese and he just mixes up the politeness levels all the time. Like, he goes from crazy informal to crazy formal back and forth, and he delivers lines fine. Like, structurally they are perfect, pronunciation is more or less perfect, but he's delivering them in completely the wrong context and switching back and forth so quickly that he seems insane.
Yeah, and obviously switching the politeness level will make you socially awkward when you're speaking with people. Like, that's something they need to master. I know that people will understand when you make mistakes. But when you're too friendly with them, or when you're too formal with them, that will break a relationship that you might have with people you meet during trips, for example.
Well, luckily the Japanese are very, very forgiving with foreigners of their mistakes, right? Because, like, the Japanese in general, this is super stereotypical, I'm sorry, but this is more or less how it was from people I talked to over there. They are terrified of making mistakes as well, so they will just not engage with you in English. Even if their English is actually very, very good, they are so terrified of making mistakes that they won't even bother. So that sort of thinking sort of takes place on their side. So they actually are very respectful of people who have the, I guess, bravery to speak in Japanese and to make mistakes, and they are very understanding of that. On the other hand, I'm not going to do it on purpose and just, like, screw up the politeness levels just because I can. I'm going to try my best.
Yeah, you're right.
On the polar opposite of the all Japanese all the time learning method, there is Fluent in 3 Months with Benny the Irish Polyglot. This is the website you can search for.
Oh my. That's the best name ever.
Benny the Irish Polyglot, his bio says he's fluent in 7 languages, and I put air quotes around fluent because I sort of disagree with his definition of fluent, but he is way better than I am at any of those 7 languages, and I believe it's actually more than 7 now. I think his bio is out of date. And it's completely the opposite approach. The opposite approach is just get out there and talk to people, and who cares about making mistakes? And I am way more in line with that. It's not who cares about making mistakes, but, like, if you're going to make mistakes, so why not embrace that you're going to make mistakes and at least try?
Yeah. And I know that most of the time I try to be in that state of mind, but I know that I have issues with it. Meaning that I'm not scared, but I have fear when I make mistakes. And I know that I do make mistakes.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, I'll speak in Japanese, and then, like, I'll finish the sentence, and then I'll be like, that sentence made no fucking sense. Yeah. And my friends will be, no, it's okay, it's okay. And I'm like, no, I'm sorry. That sentence was, like, a train wreck. I should, like, go hide now.
And mix that feeling with being Canadian, and then this means you'll apologize about feeling that you're making mistakes and you know that you shouldn't make mistakes to learn.
Oh, well, luckily in Japan, apologizing every second is like a national sport over there. So they have something in common with us. Yay. That is more or less what I've been doing as well. So I took like the immersion SRS part of All Japanese All the Time and fused that with the yeah, but mistakes are okay from Benny the Polyglot, and sort of got my own learning method. And we'll be going a little more into that. So what I did, basically, I immersed. I got a feel for sentence structure, native sentence structure. How do people talk? What does a sentence sound like normally? What are common patterns? I added words to my spaced repetition system. It was a lot of work to do full sentences, so I decided to start with words. That's probably an error in hindsight, but I'll go more into that a little later. And I decided to slowly reach out to friends in Japanese on Twitter, and that might have been a little bit early.
There's a delete feature on Twitter for a purpose, you know?
Yeah, well, it's a little late now in 2014 to go delete tweets from 2011. So winter 2011/2012 comes, and Lukma no subs. So I turned off subtitles in all the anime I was watching at the time. I was watching probably 4 or 5 shows a week. That's more or less like the pace I have every season of anime that comes around, so that's pretty good. And I haven't turned back since. There were 2 reasons for me turning off the subs on my anime watching. The first was wanting to get better at Japanese before my trip, and the second was iPad videos app being a buggy piece of crap. Like, there have been long-running subtitle bugs in the iPad video apps. Videos app for years, and on Apple TV as well, and I don't think anyone at Apple watches videos with subtitles because otherwise they would have been fixed. Like, at a certain point, if the height of your video was an odd number, subs wouldn't show up. There were weird bugs like that.
You know, that's really nice when you need the sub to understand stuff.
Yeah, it was sort of frustrating. So for a while, like, I had this huge workflow. It was insane. It was like a bunch of Apple scripts and Ruby scripts and a bunch of crazy shit that would take basically an MKV file or whatever that you would download off the internet totally illegally, and it would split the MKVs, MP4, and subtitle tracks. Then it would throw them into iSubtitle, which is a wonderful application that lets you take SRT subtitle files and merge them into an MP4 container so that they are soft subs, not hard subs, where the subs are embedded into the actual frames. And that worked great until the iPad Videos app decided to not show subs anymore. So I basically said, well, screw that. I'm just going to download the episodes raw, and I'm going to watch them raw. And it was a little rough at the start. So I don't know how many anime fans are listening to this, but I was listening to Hyoka at that season, the Kyoto animation series. And it's basically like a mystery show and mysteries taking place in a literary club. And already there, you've got a big problem because mysteries are already pretty loaded in terms of vocabulary. And now you've got a literary club on top of it. It's even worse.
So you have nice, like, fancy word that you won't understand.
I can tell you that show was gorgeous. I can't tell you the whole story.
Something happened on the screen, and then there was the end of the season.
Yeah, so aside from that, though, things went relatively well, especially since I've degenerated and started listening mostly to children's anime now, so that's even worse. Another notable thing about that winter, that was when I had my very first dream that was entirely in, very basic, but still, Japanese. So at least something had sunken into my brain. Like, enough had sunken into my brain that I was able to dream in Japanese, which is really the sign that you've sort of made it. Maybe not enough to converse and all that stuff, and we'll talk about that shortly. But, like, my level of understanding was enough that I could listen to one of my dreams and the Japanese seemed to make sense.
Or I guess your brain was doing some kind of trick on you and you were thinking that it was Japanese.
No, I was Japanese. So spring 2012, I go to Japan for the first time. It was nuts.
Woohoo!
Yeah. It was 10 days, one in Yokohama and the rest in Tokyo. Yokohama is my my first love. I love Yokohama. It's the best city in the world. And I'm going back there next year. My only extra preparation for the trip, on top of what I had already been doing in terms of very basic studying, I studied the flashcards with the names of every train station on the Yamanote line, which is the primary train line in Japan, so that if I got lost, I could at least sort of figure it out. This turned out to be immensely helpful.
Yeah, that's a brilliant idea, you know?
Yeah, it turned out to be extremely helpful, except when I got lost, none of the train stations near me were on the Yamanote line. So, okay. I had no idea where I was. More on that in a bit. My Japanese was very, very limited in scope, but I could do the following things. I could order food at restaurants, which is great. I could buy things at stores and understand what the price of things were, which is also very useful. I could ask for directions, which was very, 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 very useful because I got lost as soon as I got there. And I could ask people if they spoke English so we could switch the conversation over to English if I felt too uncomfortable in Japanese, which also came in fairly handy a couple times.
That's kind of nice that you put that one at the end when most people would put it like that's the first sentence they want to learn. The first like question they want to learn is, do you speak that language? Can we switch to that language?
Yeah, but at the same time, I was trying to do things in Japanese as much as possible. The problem is I couldn't really do that much. So pronunciation actually turned out surprisingly well because prior to the trip, I hadn't actually spoken any Japanese to anyone at all.
And that's funny that you had the idea to, wow, I want to go to Japan. And like you jumped. It's kind of strange to say jump, but you jumped to Japan and then you tried to speak English, Japanese there.
Yeah, and it started in the plane, which is even weirder. So the person next to me on the plane did not speak English. And I needed like a pen or something to fill out a form, and I needed to ask the person next to me. And the other problem is they asked on the customs form or immigration form, one of the two, to write your address, and I only had the address in kanji, and I was not going to transcribe that address in kanji because I suck at kanji. So I had to ask him what the romanization for the thing was, and my pronunciation was terrible, like terrible. And it took like 2 days to get the pronunciation back on track. And I'm very, very happy that I've always been very, very good at copying accents. So I just have to hear it natively and just try it out long enough. And then I can just snap to grid to that accent really easily. So that was actually really useful. On that trip, I ended up going sightseeing with Moyashi from Hitori Blog, which is a Japanese language jailbreak and iOS productivity blog, which is really good. If you speak Japanese, you should follow him. And two of his friends, Oji and Yoshihiro Tsuboi. Moyashi he speaks English very well, but he didn't want to speak English. Nothing against him, I understand. So most of what I said was in English and was interpreted by the other two who knew English actually fairly well. And last but not least about that trip, I should share the anecdote about when I got lost in Japan.
The one with the old lady?
No.
Oh, I love that one.
I think I know what you're talking about, but no, not that one. I had a list of stores I wanted to check out, and basically I decided to go to the closest ward of Tokyo from where I was staying and just go to all of the book-off stores. Book-off stores are used bookstores that also sell video games, and I was on a quest to buy as many used music games as possible, obviously. So I decided to go hit all the book-offs in that ward, and then I got lost, and that was not very fun. And then I wound up at this place, which I did not know was called Kamado Station at the time, but it was called Kamado Station, and there was a shopping mall, and then you said, hey, do you want to hop on Skype? And then we tried hopping on Skype, and it didn't work, which was fun.
Yeah, that first trip was the trip that Yannick and I tried to speak a lot, like to Skype a lot, and it was, nope, 3G doesn't want to Skype.
Yeah, it turns out the 3G was port blocking Skype, so we couldn't do it. And FaceTime too.
Which is kind of strange that it was port blocked, but
Yeah. So I was lost in this place, and the sky was really, really gray, and I was afraid that it was going to rain, and obviously I had left my coat at the at the place I was staying, which was not the smartest idea. So yeah, I got lost, and I decided to get on a train. And then I get out of the train, and it's pouring rain, and I check Twitter, and Twitter is covered with these two kanji. I have no idea. Well, I knew the kanji individually, but I didn't know what they meant. The first one was basically for, like, well, this is one of the meanings. It's the one I knew at the time. Machine, as in, like, if you're counting the number of arcade machines, that's the suffix that you're going to put. That's, of course, why I know that, because of arcade machines. And the second one is the one for wind. And it turns out that that in Japanese is pronounced taifu, which is Japanese for typhoon. I did not know this. Apparently, everybody except me in Tokyo knew that there was a giant ass typhoon coming that was like of historical proportions. And I was outside, like in a t-shirt and stuff, walking around Tokyo like, hey, it's going to rain soon, I guess. So, yeah. And then I went to go eat. So I went to Koko Curry that wasn't close to where I was, and I decided to eat a bunch of curry. I come outside, and it's pouring rain like crazy, 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 crazy. So yeah, there was a giant typhoon in Japan while I was there, and I made it out alive.
That's so you. Oh, that's so you.
Yeah. So then I came back to Canada, obviously. I couldn't stay there. I took a lot of photos and screenshots of words that I saw in Japan so I could add them to my SRS decks, which also came in fairly useful. And I started something called the Japanese Engadget Project. But before I explain what the Japanese Engadget Project is, I want to know, Rikari, when you learn a new programming language, how do you learn it?
Okay. Let me think, what was the last language I tried to learn? And what I did. I think the last languages I wanted to, or maybe last languages I wanted to be fluent in for, was some kind, like maybe some webby stuff like Ruby, PHP, and all that shit. And I think most of the time, I always tried to go the paper way, like buy a book or maybe, like I say, paper, but maybe find reading stuff I can read. So web pages, books, that. And maybe I'm stubborn or what, but every time I do that, I know that it's not going to work. But every time I try to learn a new language or a programming language, I always do that. Maybe because it feels
like this is a project. I bought a book.
Yeah, something like that. It's like, I have a physical thing here that says I need to do that. So maybe I buy a physical product just to, like, empower me, like, to empower myself. I want to do that. I want to be productive in that new product I want to do.
But if you don't actually end up using the book, then what do you do to actually get a feel for the language?
I guess I look at code and try to find stuff to do, and I try to immerse myself most of the time. I always end up to just try to immerse myself for a day, like go read stuff about that language, go, I want to fix a problem, whatever the problem is. Even if it's already fixed by 10,000 people, I just want to look at solution that people did for a particular problem to honestly immerse myself.
So that's more or less what I do. So instead of reading documentation, I read source code. And I find patterns and I figure out how it works for myself based on just looking at people's code and fiddling with the code and stuff like that, which is part of why I'm actually very, very interested about interested in Swift's interactive documentation, because that looks insane, because you can just try it right there in the documentation and do both at the same time, which seems like a great idea. Well, you can actually do the same with human languages as well. You can do it with Japanese. And the Japanese Engadget project is basically that. So Japanese Engadget is separate from normal Engadget. I believe it is the only localized version of Engadget there is. And it's very weird because they, at least last time I checked, they still use like the old, old logo from Engadget. Like they're very, very behind in terms of the redesign. Oh. So it actually looks like retro Engadget when you go to that website. And they're very short in length, the articles on that website. And every day I would try to translate one myself and make a vocabulary list of words that are relevant to basically my industry or my interests. And it turned out to actually work fairly well.
So that Japanese Engadget project seems to me like the simple English version of Wikipedia. If the article are fairly short in length.
Well, the articles look short in length because they're in Japanese and you can say more and less characters.
Okay. So they won't use a simpler version of Japanese, like simpler words and...
No, it's not simpler in that context, but sometimes they'll summarize long winding articles into like just one paragraph. In fact, most articles are just one paragraph, so it makes it actually fairly comfortable to say, I've got 20 minutes to kill, I'm gonna go take this thing and copy it over here and look up all the words and look at how those sentences are constructed and try and figure out what's said. So I did that for a couple months, and that actually turned out to be fairly useful. More so in learning vocabulary relevant to the electronics industry and phones and all that stuff, because that's what Engadget talks about, which is very useful for my business life as an iOS developer. If I want to look at documentation for stuff in Japanese or articles that are written in the Japanese space, now I can do so more easily because I'm more familiar with that vocabulary. Another thing that happened after I got back from Japan that year was I launched Polyphonic Room. Which apparently I mention every episode, even though I don't plan on doing so.
Yeah, right.
So if you aren't already tired of me talking about it, Polyphonic Room is a website that I run with a couple of friends, and we post music gaming news on Twitter and on our website. And it's also my coping mechanism for not being in Japan the rest of the year. It lets me stay up to date with music gaming stuff so that when I am in Japan, well, I'm already up to date on all the news and I don't have to catch up.
But I thought that Polyphonic Room was in English.
Right. So the content we post is in English because we translate the Japanese news from the Japanese sources or occasionally Korean sources, but they're less frequent.
Ah, I see. And I guess by doing translation, it helps you to better understand the language and learn faster.
Right, so it actually helps a lot for that. The other thing is we try to be very, very timely. So we try to translate on the fly, like within a couple of minutes of stuff going up. These days it's more a couple of seconds. But occasionally I make big mistakes, and we now have enough of a following that those mistakes propagate to the rest of the community, and it's bad. And one of those happened this year.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
While I was in Japan. So every year, for the past 2 years, I've gone to Japanese Amusement Expo, which is the trade show for arcade games, where Konami announces all of their big news for their music games that year. And there are 2 days to JPO. There's the first day, which is the business day, where only people who have badges for business can go in. And the second day is open admission. Anyone can go in. And there was news that came out during the business day that was posted. And all I had to go from was a screenshot of the slide that they used in the presentation, and I misinterpreted what was written on the slide, and it caused a shitstorm. So we talked a little bit on the e-money episode about Pastly, which is Konami's system for digital money, and what they're doing is, because there was a tax, there was a rise in the tax rate in Japan for sales tax, so arcades couldn't charge 100 yen anymore because they were losing money 100 yen per credit. So they had to actually raise it to 120 yen. And they did that with Pastly in April. But the slide said something like, passively exclusive modes in April. And the way I had interpreted that was Konami games would only be playable using passively in April. And that is what I posted. And the problem is that causes a shitstorm because Korea doesn't have passively. The rest of the world doesn't have passively, but they're also not supposed to have Konami music games in theory. They're pirating it. Don't say it too loud, but everybody knows. So that was sort of a big deal that caught people off guard, and the faulty translation went around the internet quite a bit. And then it was like, oh, what they really meant was they're introducing new modes, which are the new default, but you can still play with coins, that are exclusive to passively usage. And my misinterpretation caused a big shitstorm, and it wasn't really fun. So I had to correct myself later on, and I did a better job because the original thing was one tweet with like 70 characters just saying, yep, Konami games are going to be passively only in April 2014, lol. And I had to write like a several hundred word post saying, okay, here is exactly what is happening. Here is how I screwed up the interpretation, and I'm sorry. So that happens. So don't always rush too much. But at the same time, I had very limited information to work off of. I had a screenshot of a slide that had like three words on it.
And also, I guess it goes back to like embracing the mistakes that you make.
Yeah, but in this case, people aren't very, very excited about your mistakes when you make them in public forum like that.
I know, but it's part of being a famous, air quote here, famous person.
Right. So another thing I did after that Japan trip is I started using Core 2000 Dex for SRS. So the SRS app I use is called Anki. It is the most popular one on the internet. It is also open source, except on iOS, where it costs $20 because it's your way of supporting the development of the app. And you can go download decks that people have made for Anki directly. And there are various series of them. Core 2000 is take the 2000 most frequently used words in Japanese and make various kinds of cards based on that. So they test sentence comprehension, listening, definitions, reading. Basically every aspect of a Japanese word that you could seemingly test in with flashcards, they test you on. And in the present day, I'm actually most of the way through Core 6000, which is the 6000 most frequently used Japanese words. And what I do when I do those SRS sessions is I reverse engineer those sentences for patterns, reverse engineer words that are composed of multiple kanji. Because kanji can mean something on its own, generally. But if you combine the two, it can take a different meaning. And in certain compounds, the kanji can have different pronunciations. So all of this stuff is stuff that you can learn. Like, you can memorize all those yourself, but I'm not good at memorizing things myself. I have to find patterns and tricks to remember those things. So I try to reverse engineer as much of that as possible with the 2000 sentences. And, like, I have something like, I don't have the exact count on hand, but I think it's like 30,000 cards that I've done since I've started.
Wow, that's...
That's a lot of cards.
That's a lot of cards.
And I only have like 100 suspended that I have screwed up enough times that the system is like, yeah, you're never going to get this one right. I'm going to suspend it. So that's a pretty good rate.
And it's going to be suspended for...
Until I go check it back. I can go uncheck the suspended box.
So the algorithm in the app is good enough to just like remove that card from your deck.
Yeah, I think if you screw it up 15 times within a period of X days, it just removes it and says suspended, and then you have to go check it back to say, I want to relearn this word. So that's pretty good. 2013, I go to Japan for the second time. I spent a month and a half in Yokohama. And I had a few foreigner friends to actually hang out there. So my friend Maddie was in from California. He was doing an exchange, student exchange in Yokohama, which was great because it meant we could go play Sound Voltex a lot together. There's also Kanako, which is one of my good friends who worked on the icon for my app, which we will be talking about later. I met her for the first time that year. But I also met up with more Japanese people this time. So mostly hackers. I met up with Ichinomoto, which is a Kindle hacker. He's responsible for a lot of the Kindle jailbreaking stuff out of Japan. And he translated the UI of my app Mitsuba for me into Japanese, which was really, really nice of him to do. I also met up with R Plus and Tom Go from the jailbreaking community. They do, I can't remember what R Plus does, which is probably terrible. But Tom Go does browser changer, which allows you to change your default browser on iOS, which is very popular.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. I don't know why people use Chrome, but apparently they do. And we conversed almost entirely in Japanese. The only time that I didn't speak in Japanese was when I wanted to explain what the app I was working on at the time did, because I didn't have that vocabulary. That app never shipped, by the way. Also, something else that happened is I accidentally wiped my phone without a backup and having to restore everything at a McDonald's in the middle of Shibuya. That was fun.
Like on the McDonald's Wi-Fi?
Actually, we were trying every carrier LTE and McDonald's Wi-Fi and having varying levels of success on all of them. Mm. I think in the end, AU LTE saved us all. I also discovered that my Japanese gets way better when I'm drinking.
All of my friends that learn a new language always say that. Like, oh, and I can attest that I was saying that when I was in Sweden. I was like, oh, my Swedish is way better than when I'm drinking.
Well, it makes sense. You're less inhibited. Sometimes that's not always a good thing, but when it comes to speaking in a language you're not very comfortable in, it actually makes a pretty decent difference. Speaking of drinking things, I also went to Bikone, which is short for Beat Connection, and it's a club event for music gamers. So basically you go to a nightclub, except during the day, and go listen to DJs spin some songs from music games, which is actually pretty insane. It sounded very, very interesting to me. I had found out about the event through sources that I frequented for Polyphonic Room. And it was the first time I went to a social type event with complete strangers in Japan, where Japanese is the primary language, which was a little nerve-wracking. I managed to sneak into the event largely undetected. Like, people didn't really seem to notice that there was, like, a foreigner in the middle of the room, not really sure what he was doing there. Eventually, like, someone noticed. My friend Natsuki, who organizes the event, noticed me, and the DJs noticed me eventually, and they were like, "Who the hell are you?" Not really. And immediately, like, we were on Twitter talking to each other a lot, which was really great. And it sounds like an overstatement, but it's actually fairly life-changing to meet people who are as passionate about your weird hobbies as you are when you seem like a complete, like, you seem completely nuts over here talking about music games, because people think like Guitar Hero and Rock Band are the only two games that have ever existed in the music genre, which is partially insulting and partially understandable.
Yeah, it's mostly insulting for you and understandable for me.
Yeah, well, it's like when people pretend that Guitar Hero invented like music gaming, and I'm like, no way.
The correct way would be that they invented the music gaming here in Latin America. They popularized it here.
Yeah, they made everyone burnt out on it by making yearly games that weren't very good. So, it was incredibly fulfilling to know that I had gotten far enough in my Japanese learning to participate in conversations of non-trivial length in Japanese, although there was some struggling, which was really cool. Then there's like, I forgot everything I did between 2013 and 2014 when I went back. So I don't really remember if I changed anything in my learning technique. Really, all I've been doing ever since then is run my flashcards for an hour every night before bed, which has been very, very useful in keeping my Japanese fresh in my mind all the time.
But you didn't decide to add a new technique to your repertoire, for example.
No, because I figured like I had gotten far enough as is at my own pace using that method that it was good enough for me.
And I guess right now at the point that you are, I'm sure you will consider yourself fluent, but
no, if you want to... Actually, no.
Oh, really? Okay, then let me finish even then. So what I'm trying to say is, at the level you are, is what you need to do is learn new words. Like, you're at the level that you know basic grammar, I would say.
Actually, yeah. So this is what's weird. So to take a slight tangent, my grammar knowledge is complete shit. And it wouldn't seem that way, but everything I've learned in Japanese is reverse engineered. And there are some patterns that I haven't figured out yet that are, like, all over the place. Like, there's some fairly basic stuff I don't know how to use or don't use regularly enough that it sticks, and all that stuff. And that's partly what's worrying me so much about JLPT N2, which I'll talk a little bit later. But, like, I have a certain level of grammatical understanding, but that level is completely different from my level of being able to understand spoken content, which is completely different from my level of being able to speak in it. Like, the levels of comprehension are isolated by area, and in some areas I'm actually very, very good for the little studying I've done, little with an asterisk, like little relative to most people.
So what you're trying to say is, for you don't have an average knowledge of everything, you just have an awesome knowledge.
Yeah,
of
I have
some
very
stuff.
Unbalanced knowledge of Japanese. Yeah, so like grammar, I am not very good at. Vocabulary, I do surprisingly well at, apparently. And like listening, like I'm way, 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 way better at listening than writing or speaking, because I'm able to understand things even though I can't reuse those sentence structures to create my own sentences, if you understand what I mean.
And we're able to draw some patterns if you remind yourself about when you started to learn English and French when you was younger. Like, relate those patterns related to your unbalanced knowledge in Japanese.
Well, the difference with like growing up bilingual is, like, at least in Quebec, for the very least, you need to know French. Otherwise, you're, well, okay, here you need to know French or else you're screwed, because it's what everybody speaks, right? So at a certain point, you have to get some level, balanced level of learning in French to actually be functional in Quebec in everyday life, or at least here. In English, it's sort of the same. I spent so much time in English school that I had to develop a balanced understanding of the language on everything. But in Japanese, I'm only there at most 2 months a year. Like, so there's nothing really pushing me to actually push my understanding of things. If my level is sufficient for what I do, I don't really see the need to go study those patterns. You understand what I mean?
Yeah,
I'm
sort of
meandering here.
No,
but
I do. So right now, your level of knowledge is good enough for traveling to Japan 2 months a year. Might not be good enough to maybe start thinking about moving there, but it's good enough for what you getting to right now.
Yeah, so the way I like to think of it is, for the spheres of interest I have, like, if I want to talk about phones, yeah, sure, I can speak Japanese fine. If I want to talk about music games or video games, yeah, I can do just great. But, like, put me in a business environment and I'm fucked. Like, my formal Japanese, unfortunately, has sort of disappeared from my memory. I mean, like, in textbooks, often they'll teach you the formal form first because it's better to be too formal than to be not formal enough, which makes sense. But, like, every day on Twitter, I'm not going to be super formal to my friends. Like, that's not how I work. And most of the time, I'm with my friends, right? So that stuff just starts drifting away from me and it becomes harder to remember, whereas what I use more frequently just jumps out more often.
Yeah, exactly. The formal level ran away from you.
Yeah.
And it's normal because you, like, most when you, I'm sure that most of your flash call is familiar language. If familiar can be applied to Japanese, you won't try to learn like formal pronunciation or formal meaning of words when you won't use them.
Yeah,
that's kind of unproductive for you.
Right, except when I have a test that asks me to produce these things in formal language, and then I'm like, oh, that's fun. So yeah, this year I went back to Japan, and my Bikone friends were really, really thrilled to see me there, because we had spent all year talking on Twitter and like the last few months, like maybe like 4 months, saying, yeah, I really want to be in Japan right now. Yeah, we really want you to be in Japan right now. So that was cool. I participated in one of their offshoot events, another jukebox, which was an event that they organized where you play, where DJs would play music game licenses. So any famous songs, basically, by famous artists that have been licensed for use in music games. And I did something special where I played songs that were licensed in the American versions of Japanese music games, or altogether American music games. And people really like that, apparently, so that's cool. I also DJed at another event called Pikagere, and I met a bunch of other people there, and that was really great. I met a bunch of people who are into Sunday morning children's anime and Power Rangers and all that stuff, because that is apparently what I've become. I've become a monster that watches children's anime on Sunday mornings. So that was really fun. We had tons of crazy adventures. I guided my Japanese friends through the biggest winter they've ever lived. Which is funny because it's nothing for me, right?
Yeah, define craziest winter.
Yeah. It was like, I don't actually remember how many centimeters there were of snow that day. But like, it was a fairly average snowstorm for us here. So for them, it was crazy insane. But for us, it was like an average snowstorm.
Like something around like 15 to 25 centimeter and like a minus 10.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Okay.
I only remember the one from JPO because, like, JPO itself was a crazy experience because we took the train that was supposed to leave at 5 a.m. We took it at, like, 10:30. The train was 5 hours, 30 minutes late, which is insane. It was only, like, 10, and not even 10 centimeters of snow. It was, like, 5 centimeters of snow. And I don't know if it's because the arcade industry is going down the toilet, which is partially true, or because of the weather, but JPO attendance was halfway of what it was last year, the year before. So that was really weird. But I guess it's mostly due to the weather, I hope.
Also, if it happened this year, you need to accept my challenge. What you need to do, if it's snow like crazy, like air quote crazy, you need to be wearing t-shirt and short outside. And think everybody would like, what the fuck? That guy's wearing shorts and it's freezing.
Well, I'm not a fan of shorts in general, but I have gotten some weird stares from people wearing t-shirt and jeans out, like when it's 10 outside. I mean, like, I'm comfortable in jeans and t-shirt outside when it's 10. But they were like staring at me going, what's wrong with this guy? Like, some people were literally screaming things at me like, what are you doing? Because like one of the big buildings in Yokohama is Landmark Tower, and there are very, very, very long like the walkways like in the airport. You know, like the, you know what I mean, right? The moving walkways.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So there are some of those like from the train station all the way to Landmark Tower, which is like maybe 600 meters or whatever. And I was like going through those, and the guy on the opposite side was staring at me like, what are you doing? It's 10 degrees out. And I'm like, yeah. Yeah, it's 10 degrees out. What are you doing in your coat, dude?
Yeah. You know what? When I was in Sweden, I used to just say like, oh, I'm Canadian. And everybody was like, oh, that's why. Like,
yeah.
I was used to say like, oh, that's nothing, 10 degrees. And they were like, what the fuck? Why is it nothing for you? And then I was so tired to say that, I was just like, I'm Canadian. And everybody would clicked. So
Yeah. So
I know what to buy you for Christmas. I need to buy you a really like Canadian shirt.
Oh,
like
God.
Or a wardrobe of Canadian shirt that you need to wear when you're in Japan.
Oh God, no. I really don't want to rep Canada while I'm there, sorry.
Like one with the Prime Minister, one of the one with the Quebec Prime Minister, and like,
no thank you. So the communication gap this year was actually very, very, very small, and that's great. It was maybe one word every couple sentences or people speaking just too quickly, quicker than I'm used to. Otherwise, I could pretty much understand everything people were talking to me about, and I could communicate pretty much everything I was thinking in Japanese fairly quickly. Occasionally I would have like those moments where I would say like that wasn't even a sentence or something and I would notice it, but it was actually fairly rare. And that was really, really great this year. So we're reaching the conclusions. Learning methods are going to vary from person to person. Like I said earlier, many websites, they say this is capital T, the capital C, correct, capital W, way, trademark sign. but most of those websites are trying to sell something to you, and it is in their interest to bill themselves as the correct way, even though learning doesn't work like that. We all learn in different ways, and I think it's dishonest to make it seem like there's one correct way. There's value in sharing what learning methods work for who and exploring that with other people so that we can figure out collectively what we think is our best method. But don't get carried away with the productivity porn aspect of it. Productivity porn is a term that I'm not sure if Merlin Mann invented it or if he got it off something else, but the idea is you're reading so much about being more productive that you're not being productive. So you don't want to spend all your time reading about language learning techniques instead of learning the language.
And it's like when you're reading about GTD and you never use it.
Yeah. What's most important is motivation. Some will criticize people who say that they want to learn Japanese to watch anime or to play video games. I don't really care. The best learning method won't succeed if you aren't the slightest bit motivated to do anything. Friends help a lot. If you have a communication gap with your friends and you meet someone really, really cool and you really, really want to talk to them, you will be insanely motivated to do what it takes to actually get better at the language. And to go over to Quebec for a second, the state of Quebec and English, the political disputes over language aren't helping motivate kids learn English because they believe that being culturally insular is a fundamental part of our provincial identity. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no. That's kind of true, and it's sad, you know?
Yeah, English is useful.
And French is it also. Like, people always say that, like, English is the language to learn. Like, you know, like, if you want to travel and all that stuff, we all know. But at the same time, it's a good idea to know your, like, your first language. And here in Quebec, it's French. And I'm a proponent of, like, all people should learn just both and be good at both while still keeping that relationship with French being there, like our own language.
Yeah, well, I could go on a whole rant about, like, cultural stuff here, so I won't. But, like, so much of what we hear about English here is, it's hard to really put it in words, but English is like the lingua franca of the internet if you exclude Chinese. And we're moving towards a world where the internet is more and more important. I mean, like, arguably, it's sort of disappointing, like, when Quebec businesses don't have online presences at all because, like, the French internet is basically nothing. It's sort of weird. It feels like being in the 1990s. Sometimes being in Quebec with relation to being on the internet, like, there aren't web stores for stuff in Quebec. Quebec businesses just don't have that.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say the issue related to that is language. It's just, like, knowledge about technology.
Yeah, but that's partly related to language, no?
Maybe not human language, but, like, programming language, yes.
Well, that too, but anyway. So, at the time you hear this, I will be in Boston writing the Japanese language proficiency test.
And we all do hope that you won't be failing that exam. So, finger crossed. Finger crossed for you.
It's the Japanese equivalent to the TOEIC. I pronounce it TOEIC, which I don't even know if that's the correct way, but I'm going to pronounce it that way, damn it.
The French way to pronounce this is TOEIC.
Okay, that's good. It happens twice a year, though most places in North America will only do the winter session. There are five levels of the JLPD. I'm going to be taking level 2, which is the second highest one, so not the top one. I could probably breeze through 3. Last year I was looking at JLPTN 3 and I thought it was like approximately my level. This year I look at it and I'm like, this is too easy. So I'm going with 2. The problem is that the step between 3 and 2 is actually fairly high. 4 and 5 might as well not exist because they're so basic that they're not even worth taking, really. And 1 is also fairly high step up from N2, as far as I can tell. It's probably a terrible idea of me to actually take this test during crunch time for my app, because I'm very, very busy and I have basically no time to study for the exam. So I'm just doing the same as usual and hoping it works out, and it's probably not.
And I love your next time, which is no confidence at all.
Yeah.
It's not the first time. It's not the first time in the first episode that you mentioned that you like you have the weird feeling. You think that you'll fail that exam, and it's sad because you're kind of going to Boston to do that exam because I think that's the only place on the East Coast that you can do it. Right?
Well, it's like I could take N3 and I could pass it, but then I would have done absolutely nothing. It's like, yeah, I already know looking at this that I'll pass it, so why do I bother, right? Like, it would seem like even more of a waste to go to Boston to do a test that I already know I'm going to pass. Whereas this is more of a challenge. The problem is that the challenge is coming at the worst possible time for me because I'm trying to ship an app.
Yep. Part of the life.
Yes, but at the same time, like, I'm doing this for curiosity, so my employer isn't going to be... Well, my employer is myself, so I guess I am going to be disappointing my employer if I don't pass. But, like, I have no one to disappoint except myself. Which is different from if I was doing this like for a job and I needed to get N2 to get a job and I failed it. And then I'm like, well, I guess I'm not getting that job. There's none of that pressure. It's just myself that I can disappoint, which is sort of re-comforting, I guess.
I haven't told you that if you fail, we will stop doing that podcast.
Damn it.
Yeah. No. I don't want to put that kind of pressure on you.
And at the same time, I'm actually going into the exam to think like, it's going to be very, very interesting to see what N2 is like, because then I'll have a better idea of what to focus on for studying if I have to retake it next year, which is likely because I'm probably going to fail.
I do have a question related to that test, because compared to the TOEIC, if I recall correctly, the TOEIC there does not have levels in it. Like, the score that you get will be your level of knowledge.
Oh, interesting, right. Well, I'm not really familiar with the English test because I never had to take it.
I did it during university. I think that's one. That's the one. Let me do a quick Google search for a sec.
Probably, I would guess.
I would guess also. Yep, that's the one. That's with the... Oh, yes. You honestly should go to their website. When you mentioned, like, 90s website,
oh,
that's
God.
It.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, so the TOEIC... The way I remember it is the TOEIC has two parts. There's like a reading part and an oral part. And it's kind of strange because that's those are my forces in English. So it was pretty easy for me. And most people I know had that same issue. Like, it's a good issue to have, you know? Like, you will rock that test because it's what most people are good at. And, like, I was, after doing that test, everybody was pretty confident to have an awesome grade. And we were speaking about that test, and we were like, you know, we're still having some issue when we write and speak. Hmm. But according to that test, we are, like, awesome in English.
Yeah, well, that's why I was sort of hoping that N2 wouldn't be that bad. And maybe it's not going to be that bad. I mean... Depending on which, like, there are preparation materials that you can practice with. The problem is it varies a lot depending on which batches of PDFs I take. Because, like, on some of them, I will do extremely well. And the only thing that is worrisome is time constraints. Because, obviously, I don't have to work under a time limit when I'm doing them at home and everything. But then, like, I'll flip to another batch and it'll be all grammatical edge cases. And I'm going to be like, yay, I don't know any of these constructs. Like, I should probably cram them before the exam because I'm going to need to know them fairly well. But like, that is the biggest part that worries me. That or kanji that look exactly the same, or seemingly exactly the same. That is sort of my big thing. Or like being, I joke sometimes about being half dyslexic in Japanese, which is not really something you can do because like the characters themselves don't have what makes dyslexia dyslexia. Like, it's not like letters looking like other letters the problem. It's just that like two kanji will look exactly the same, except there's one extra line in another one, and you'll be, oh, well, that changes the word from A to B, and it's completely different, and you just screwed up like all the kanji questions because they're all edge cases like that. So I'm more worried about those edge cases. Reading comprehension, I'm fairly confident I'm going to do extremely well with. Listening comprehension, I'm fairly confident I will do extremely well with. It's all the grammar questions that are scaring the shit out of me.
Yeah, because you mentioned that you're a grammar logist shit, so.
Yeah, relative to where I should be to be N2 level, yeah. But the thing is, like, I can read the sentence and I will understand the meaning of the sentence, but if it's like, choose this sentence that fits into this context, or even worse, like, there's one of the questions with one of the practice exams I did, it was like, the question was like, give dating advice to this guy.
Dating advices?
Yeah, well,
wow.
So A, that's terrible for me because I'm not very skilled in that department. But B, it's like, well, in B, like, you look at the answers and the answers are all like, well, some of these answers are viable for Japanese culture. Some of these answers are viable for Western culture. So A, which culture do I go with for to answer this question? And B, like, I guess this has something to do with grammatical constructs. I mean, it's this exam isn't about dating advice, like, clearly. So, like, what is this question asking me to do?
Maybe that's, you were thinking about the wrong, like, it, like, answering that that question related to which culture do you want the advice is not the right thing to do.
I mean, like, it's a test for foreigners, so it could be a trick question. Like, if you absolutely want to pass this test, you have to answer the Japanese answer to this question. But it's like, I guess there was an underlying question. I ended up getting the right answer, so that's good. But I'm still not sure what that question was about.
So what was your answer?
I don't even remember the scenario anymore. It's been so long.
Oh, okay. I only wanted to know if it was like the Japanese answer or the North American answer.
I don't even remember. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
So that's about it for language learning. Do you have anything to add to the subject before we go?
No, but I know that you want to plug something else also today.
Yeah, so last week I hinted that I am working on an application and that I was going to stay quiet about that application until the appropriate time. Well, apparently that appropriate time is now.
I also want to know that I haven't pressured you to make that appropriate time to be now.
No, it sort of happened like coincidentally this week.
Exactly.
We're recording a little early this week because obviously I'm going to be away next week and I want to get the editing done early. And since we're doing something risky with editing this week, well, I want to get it out all the way right now. So the app I've been working on for the past few months is called EOS. It is a GIF generation app for iOS, which lets you take any video in your camera roll, iTunes library, provided it's not copy protected, or iCloud Drive, and take that and make animated GIFs out of them and share them on social media. And it's been a rough ride. A lot of things have happened that were not supposed to happen, which ended up making the app take forever instead of a couple months like I had hoped. It seems dumb to admit this, but the whole app was working in April with a different UI, and then I decided to redo the entire UI and everything went to hell. But it's basically done now, plus or minus a few little things. By the time you're listening to this, the beta will probably have gone live, but if you wish to participate in the beta, since we have few listeners, I guess you guys are invited in. So contact me at Sakurina on Twitter and I might let you in. You can also go see my stupidly basic teaser page at eosapp.moe. That's eosapp.moe. Or you can actually go follow the app on Twitter at eos_app. And that's my plug for this week.
That's the last one for this week, I would say.
We may actually do, well, I would love to do an episode on basically a postmortem on all of the decisions I had to take during EO's development and what it ended up happening, because it might actually be fairly interesting, but I would like to ship the app first.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Ship the app first, and then you'll be able to do a real postmortem.
Yeah. Another thing that we have decided recently is that while I'm in Japan in January, we're going to be putting the show on hiatus for a little while. We're going to be basically ending this season of the show and starting a new season back up when I'm back, which should be in this beginning of March.
Yeah, so this season should end around mid-January. We haven't decided yet, so stay tuned and you'll know in a couple of episodes when we want to end that season. And Yannick will enjoy this nice trip again in Japan, and then we'll start season two of the show.
We may do a special episode with me live from Japan if we can get the technical stuff worked out, because I have limited access to Wi-Fi while I'm in Japan, and as I said earlier, Skype is port blocked on wonderful Docomo 3G for foreigners. So we'll see what we can do about that. Not promising anything, but we would actually like to do a special episode with me live from Japan.
And we also have another special idea, like as a plan B, but I don't want to tell it right now.
We do have a special idea. I didn't hear about this. I don't remember this. You'll have to tell me after we get off air.
No, but you do remember, just like you forget. You forget it now. We spoke about it after last week.
I completely forgot. Anyway, on that note, we should go for now. So if you wish to follow our show on Twitter, you can follow it at limipo_podcast. That's LIMIPO_podcast. Show notes. Where do we find show notes, Karibi?
LimitlessPossibility.net/4.
Yes, four.
Fourth episode.
You can follow me personally at Sakurina on Twitter. That's SAKURINA.
And you can follow me personally on Twitter at Lukonush, LUCONOCHE.
I think you might have screwed that up, but I'm not sure.
Oh, really?
I'm not sure.
LUCONOCHE. No, it's fine.
Okay, whatever.
Whatever.
I'm drunk right now. Let's end the show.
And
we'll see you next episode in 2 weeks.
See you in 2 weeks.